Come in, my old true love, and spend this night with me, for I have a bed, it's a very fine bed, and I'll give it up for thee, I'll give it up for thee.
Hello, Fiona Ritchie with you for a special edition of the Thistle and Shamrock from Traditional Song Week at the Swannanoa Gathering in Western North Carolina, where our guest is someone steeped in the song traditions of Appalachia, Sheila K. Adams.
It's a won't come in or I'm not coming in to spend this night with thee, for I've got a wife in the old Scotland. This night she waits for me, this night she waits for me. It she pulled out her little penknife, it a beam both keen and sharp, and she stepped it up to her own true love and stopped him through his heart. She stopped him through his heart. Lady Margaret, he cried, woe be it's unto thee, for there weren't no wife in the old Scotland that I loved any better than thee, that I loved any better than thee. Lay there, my own true love, 1 hour or two or three, and I will send for a doctor near to save the life of thee. Thee to save the life of thee. It's I can't live nor I won't live from the wound you've given me. No doctor's hand, just God's own hand could save my life for me. Me could save my life for me. It she cried out to a servant girl, this thing I'll promise thee. On this dark night, my gown I'll give to thee, my gown I'll give to thee. It she took a hold of his long yellow hair, and the other took up his feet, and they throwed him into the old dry well, which was so cold and deep, which was so cold and deep. Lay there, my own false love, soften your frame, and the little old wife in the old Scotland shall mourn for your return, turn shall mourn for your return.
Thanks for being here towards the tail end of a wonderful week at the Swannanoa Gathering. Traditional Song Week is an opportunity to bring together people from all sorts of singing traditions who all have one thing in common, which is their love of singing. We all share an urge to sing and an urge to connect with authentic singing and singing traditions. There's so much singing available, we just have to turn on any device, radio, television, computer, whatever. There's plenty of singing out there, but we're all in search of some authentic connection with song. Sheila, let's hear her bones. Let's swap out that chair.
That means I'm old, yeah.
Now, if this one squeaks, it's definitely Sheila.
Yeah, it's definitely... Well, it wouldn't surprise.
Let's give a very warm welcome to Sheila K. Adams. Now, I have to say, Sheila, that our paths have crossed and crisscrossed, sometimes with years in between, over a period of about 20 years,
yeah.
I think. And we first met on Sheila's home turf up in...
Marshall.
Marshall, mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And, you know, pretty quickly found out we had a lot in common in the things we wanted to talk about, to the exclusion of the rest of the company, if I recall.
Yeah, and you knew what a cloak was.
That's right. We found old words that we knew in common that people don't use outside of our respective and connected cultures. So our paths have crisscrossed across 2 decades, and I sort of think that this week has been sort of a microcosm of that, because our paths have crisscrossed through the week at different sessions and on different occasions at different times of the day, in the evening and the night, as we all continue our journey, really, through these song traditions that we've been sharing this week. But today it's Appalachia, it's the Appalachian song traditions. We're going to take a bit of a journey with Sheila Kay into the roots of that tradition. And Sheila, particularly for folks that are listening to us right now on the radio and aren't immersed in the landscape here with us, I wondered if you might just transport everyone to the heart of your land with any song tune that captures the spirit of Appalachian song traditions.
I think I'll play Granny's favorite banjo tune.
Perfect. And you're playing a 5-string banjo there, and you're playing it in that claw hammer style that's associated with Appalachian music. And I was studying it because last night here at the gathering, I was trying to master claw hammer banjo. And I think my hand ended up feeling like a claw, cramped into a claw position after it.
But I told you you should have let me give you that lesson.
I know it. We'll do it later. We'll do it later. But, it's got that lovely little easy rocking, gentle feel that sets the tone and the pace, really, of life a wee bit here. Now, Sheila, you're the 7th generation of your family in Western North Carolina. I couldn't tell you where 7 generations of my family lived particularly, and yet that's part of your knowledge of yourself.
Right.
And what was it about your family that had that strong connection to their own family history, to where that was passed on to you before you probably even fully had language, just that knowledge?
It's really interesting that you should ask that at this particular point in my life, because I've got one aunt left who's 88 years old, and everybody else is dead. And one day she said to me, "I've been waiting for everybody to die, because I've got something I want to tell you." She said, "We're all one family." And I said, "Well, what do you mean we're all one family?" She said, "The Wallins, the Nortons, the Rays, and the Chandlers are all one family. They all come from Scotland, and they were associated with not the McDonalds, but the other big clan over there, which was the Campbells."
Yes. Oh, right, other clan.
Yes, that other one, you know. And she said that we were like a satellite. Now, I don't know what it's called, but all those families were a smaller group around the big one. And she said that we all came over here together, and we stayed in one place.
Together?
1731, yeah.
They must have had some reason to want to stick together, look out for each other, look after each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my mama used to say, you know, the Scotch-Irish were the most violently programmed to violence people on the face of the earth, genetically.
And yet you and I have scar-free
faces.
But we're
so sweet.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Your family were aware then of this family history. And, of course, part of their history and part of the family culture was singing all these songs, singing all these ballads. Were they aware of that's where the ballads came from, or the love songs, as they called them?
Right, they called them love songs, and a lot of that family history, Fiona, came down with the songs. Because if they were going to sing one that mentioned Scotland or England, they would say, now this one come from across a big pond, meaning that it was carried with some family member, you know, from the UK over here. And Kaz would always tickle me. He'd say, now this is real old, and it come from across the pond. Why, you know, George Washington sung it. Probably did. And King Henry VIII as well. So, but the Wallins, however, were interesting because they were Southern English, and they got tangled up with the Scotch-Irish somehow.
Interesting, yes, because that was another influence coming into the mountains. Yeah, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, so there must have been songs they were singing too, though, that sprang from right here, that were relevant to their lives right here, and they would have known what was what.
It was really funny because what they would do is, like in The Silk Merchant's Daughter, they had a tall-masted ship coming around the bend in the river. Well, you know, Western North Carolina is kind of landlocked if you look at it on a map, but yet they were singing these songs about the sea. And I did not see the ocean until I was 17 years old.
You know, it's so interesting. David Holt said to me yesterday that, as you know David so well, and he's made a lifelong passion for collecting from a lot of the old-timers. And he said he took one lady old-timer. Is there a term for a lady old-timer, a nice gentle term for an elderly lady who's a sort of an old-timer?
It's called a crone.
A crone. Okay, an elderly lady. He took one of the ladies from whom he'd been collecting songs down to the beach. Now, she was probably a relative of Sheila's.
Yes, she was.
Okay, and he said that it was the first, she was in her 80s, and it was the first time she'd ever been to the beach, first time she'd seen the ocean. And she stood there and looked out across this ocean, speechless, and then she said, "Where are the trees?" And he said, "What do you mean where?" She said, "The pond. Where are the trees across the pond?" Because in her mind and in her family language, and you just said it, across the pond,
big pond, yeah.
She had it in mind that it was a big pond and that she would be able to see the other side. And imagine her surprise at age 80-something to realize that she actually couldn't see to the other side.
And I remember Granny saying, now her comment when I showed her the ocean was, "Well, that's a lot of water. When are we going to eat?" You know, she was more practical about things. But one thing that she did say to me was, she was up in her 80s, and she said, "Now, I know I'll never get back to the old country." You know, they still referred to it as the old country.
Was this something they aspired to do?
Yeah, all of them did. Tommy Hunter.
By the high road or by the low road?
Probably by, you know... They're going to walk it, I guess.
Because, you know that song, Loch Lomond?
Yes, yeah.
And it's sort of the spirit road that they would go if they didn't make it by the high road.
Well, Granny said one of these days she'd have wings and she'd just fly over. Oh. But she did say, you know, I won't get to go. I'm getting too old. But you'll get to and look for mountains, because I'll bet you nickel there's mountains over there. Mm-hmm. And they are, of course.
Yeah. Just going to pick Sheila's song brain throughout our time together and see what comes out. But I was wondering if you could sing a verse or two, as much as you want, of a song that is very much obviously rooted, that references up places there that we know is definitely from there, and then maybe give us a couple of verses that would have also been your family that were very much over here, so that we can kind of hear what they all had.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I know this one is from over there. I didn't know it at the time because I didn't know what the Clyde was. But there ain't no river in America named the Clyde, I don't think. But it's the verses go, I'll just do two. The winter's past and the leaves are green. The time is past that we have seen. Still I hope the day will come when you and I shall be as one. I go down to the Clyde for the morning to weep. So dissatisfied, Lord, I know I never could sleep. To think you lay by another man's side, Lord, while I sit here, watch the river glide.
Mm-hmm. That's from where I'm from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that one would have definitely been from over there. And all the ones, Fiona, I know about here are dirty.
Oh, okay.
Because I learned most of them from Inez. Can I do one that's suggestive? It's not really dirty.
Well, I'll reveal
you
something
edit,
to...
Yeah, you can
well,
edit
I'll reveal something
to
the people here and everybody listening is that quite a lot of the material that I play on my radio programs is actually certifiably unsuitable. But because it's often in very, very broad Scots or indeed in Irish or Gaelic, nobody actually knew that until this moment. I don't have to send out language advisories so people can beep things because it just kind of floats on by. But you do whatever you...
They'll probably get this maybe if they understand my accent. There was an old farmer who lived by the sea, and a merry old farmer was he, was he. He had a fair maiden who laid on the grass, and every time she turned over, she'd show her fair ruffles and tuffles as slick as a duck. She taught that old farmer a new way to bring up the children and teach them to knit, while the servants in the barnyard are shoveling out contents of the barnyard as slick as glass. If you don't like my story, you can go kiss my daughter in the parlor. Winds up the clock with a piece of red ribbon tied all round her poodle dog, her poodle dog, her poodle dog galore. If you don't like my story, I'll tell it no more.
It's all in the mind. All in the mind. Fantastic. Actually, I was reading a book about the Scots-Irish settlers and some of the land features and forts in the river and place names that they came up with were absolutely graphic and have since been, I assume, mostly changed because I don't see some of that language on maps anymore. Yeah. But you probably know all these other names for places that people don't have in the, the US Atlas. You know, when you were singing there about the Clyde and when you sing some of the love songs, as your family called them, they've got a very dreamy quality. And here we are at Traditional Song Week, and last evening a bear walked across campus and gave everybody quite a thrill as it walked sort of right past where we were. Well, we were upstairs singing. We were all sitting singing in a wee circle, but it gave everyone a bit of a thrill and excitement, and off it went. And so I thought about this bear and how it just sort of showed up during our song week and when everyone was singing and playing music. So I decided to Google what the Cherokee symbolism around bears was. Well, it said that the black bear symbolises introspection, intuition and dreaming because of their hibernation. And I thought to myself, introspection, intuition, dreaming... That's ballads, mm-hmm. isn't it? That's what's going on a lot of the time in ballads, is into thinking in yourself. There's the intuitive and the dreaming of another place, somewhere else, or someone who's not there, or something. Would you add any more words to that list?
I would. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I asked Granny why she thought it became a woman's tradition over here when it was such a, you know, man's tradition, pretty much, or at least we thought it was over there. Mm-hmm. And Granny said it was because they lived in 10-by-10s. You know what a 10-by-10 is? A log cabin, 10 feet by 10 feet, with 9 children under the age of 11. I'd have rather been with ladies and lords on milk-white steeds myself than trapped in that little old 10-by-10 with all them young'uns. And that's the way they entertained them.
Escapism as well.
For them, and it entertained the kids. And you never sat down on Granny's porch without a pot being put in your lap. And then she'd say, here, let's sing one of them old love songs. And before you knew it, you had a bushel of beans strung.
The work was done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. And one of them is Young Emily. And it was one of Granny's kind of signature songs. She really loved it a lot. But there's a verse in it that doesn't make any sense. So, but that's all right. because they misheard things, as she said. Young Emily was a fair maid. She loved to drive her boy. He drove a stage from the pearly gates way down in the lowlands low. My father runs a public house all on yonder shore. Go ye go there and enter in, and there abide this night. Now please don't tell them nothing, don't let them know your name. That your name it is Young Edmund, drove in the lowlands low. Young Edmund fell to drinking, then into bed. Said he did not know that they'd swore that night they would cut off his head. Young Emily in her chambers had such an awful dream. She dreamed she saw young Edmund's blood come a-flowing like a stream. Next morning as young Emily rose, she this did say, I'm gonna hunt for that driver boy what come in yesterday. And straightways to her father young Emily did flee. Said, Father, what has happened to the boy that come last night? Oh, daughter, dear daughter, don't you talk loud and free. His gold is all for us to claim. His body's in the sea. Oh, father, cruel father, I'll have you hung at a public show, for you've just murdered my driver boy, drove in the lowlands low. Then straightways to some counselor, young Emily did go. She told him of the awful deed done to the boy from the lowlands low. Them coats what hangs on the mountain, they look so blue and true. They remind me of my driver boy, drove in the lowlands low. My true love's laying in the ocean. Them fish swims o'er his breast. His body's in a rocking motion, and I'll pray his soul's at rest.
You mentioned Granny quite a lot.
Because, see, my grandmother died, last living one, when I was five. And
right.
So I went hunting another. And she was handy. You know, she lived right up the road, and her and my grandmother were good friends, and she was my mother's aunt.
Right,
and
right.
So somebody asked her one time, said, well, now how'd she'll get all thrown in with your grandyoungins? And she said, well, I don't know. Must have been that summer after Emily died, she showed up here, and I ain't been able to get shed of her since. And that was about the truth,
uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh.
Because I loved the songs because they told a story. And I'd always beg for one more, just one more, one more. And she said, you're the one mourningest young'un I've ever seen in my life.
And how long did she live?
She lived until 1993. Granny said, you know, we come from a family of long livers. And Daddy put it another way. He said, yeah, all them Chandler women, you have to knock in the head with a frying pan on the judgment day. And they, everyone did. I took them to see their great-great-aunt. Now, that was Burzill and Granny in their 80s. Great.
Gosh.
Yeah, she was 108 years old, and she wouldn't age any further beyond that. She died 4 years later at 108.
When you sing a song that was passed down by your great aunt, do you feel a connection to her when you sing the song?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I sure do.
So part of singing the songs is connecting with the people that also had the songs.
That one, whenever I sing that one, there's a certain point in it that I smell warm milk, because it's the one that she would always milk the cows by. Yeah, And I was the official tail holder. I always got some important job, you know. But I can still remember, you know, that smell in the early spring and in the fall and winter that would come up out of that bucket.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why these songs endure? It's because they are your connection to people, to your family?
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the things that makes them endure. We always say, the songs endure because they're wonderfully strong stories and they're wonderfully strong melodies, and we feel the connection of them. But it's more personal than that, isn't it?
Yeah. It with me, every single song, except for one that I sing, is directly learned from my family, you know. And so as a result of that, it takes me back to horseshoe pitch, you know, that I said to Kaz, I was crying, moaning around because I was a whining child. And
that's quite an admission.
Right. Well, I was, you know, because I wanted what I wanted, and I didn't care what anybody else wanted, so I wanted them to be as miserable as I could possibly make them, and so I whined a lot. And so I said to Kaz, you know, I don't want to pitch horseshoes. I want to play ball. And he said, no, you don't want to play ball. Let me sing you a song about these two boys play ball. And it was the two brothers. Yeah. And so I've got that memory, you know, of Kaz singing, and then other memories where, you know, he'd say things like, you know, the feller that sung this song had to be homesick for the homeland, you know, which was pretty sorrow, you know. And it was about, you know, him leaving home and the girl he loved behind. But I also learned from Kaz that it was because he was the second son. Now, how Kaz knew that, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But he was unlanded, and she wanted land, you know, and he had none.
When I first come to this country in 1749, I saw many fair lovers, but I never saw mine. I've viewed it all around me and saw I was all alone, and me stranger and a long ways from home. Well, it's not this long journey I'm a dreading for to go, nor the country I'm a leaving, nor the debts that I owe. There's only one thing that troubles my mind, that's leaving my darling pretty Sarah behind. Fare thee well to old mother, fare thee well to father too. I'm a going for to ramble this wide world all through, and when I get weary, I'll sit down and cry, and I'll think of my darling, pretty Sarah, my bride. Well, my true love, she won't have me, and it's this I understand. For she wants some freeholder, and I have silver and gold, and all of the other fine things that my love's house could hold. Well, I wished I was a poet and could write some fine hand. I would write my love a letter that she might understand, and I'd send it by the waters where the islands overflow, and I'd think on my darling wherever I'd go. Well, I strove through the mountains, I strove through the main, I strove to forget her, but it was all in vain. From the banks of Ocoee to the head of said brow, where I once loved her dearly, and I don't hate her now. Well, I wished I was a turtle dove, had wings and could fly right now to my lover's lodgings. Tonight I'd draw nigh, and there in her lily-white arms I'd lie there all night, and I'd watch them little windows for the dawning of day.
Pretty Sarah from Jim Taylor, late husband of Sheila Kay Adams, from All the Other Fine Things, the music that inspired Sheila Kay's novel My Old True Love on Algonquin Books. Hear more about the book and more songs, stories and clawhammer banjo from Sheila Kay Adams, who joined me at Traditional Song Week, part of the Swannanoa Gathering at Warren Wilson College in North Carolina's beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. This is NPR. This is Fiona Ritchie with our guest, Sheila Kay Adams, here on clawhammer banjo and vocals, joined by Bruce Green, fiddler, and Carol Jones on guitar for 8th of January and Cumberland Gap. Sheila Kay Adams. Thank you.
Me and my wife's pap, walked all the way to the Cumberland Gap. Cumberland Gap, Cumberland Gap, way up yonder in the Cumberland Gap.
There might be some people listening or people sitting here with us just now who have an elderly relative, someone they know who has some songs and some stories. And do you have any advice for them on how they might gently encourage these tales and stories out?
This is not original. I wish it was, but Donald Davies, who is one of the best storytellers in this country. And he was talking about interviewing, and he said, two questions. Donald gets to the point pretty quick, because he's usually in a full stretched out run to the next place he's supposed to perform. He said, number one, ask them if they could take you back in time to a person that they would like for you to meet. Who would it be and why? And if you ever get them to stop talking about that, because one person will remind them of another person, ask them if you could take me back to a place that existed that no longer exists, where would you take me and why? Two questions. And he said, you got more right there than they could answer in your lifetime. So there you go.
So go find it.
Absolutely, because it's, you know, I just happened to come from a singing family. But Daddy said the only thing he could play was radio. But by net, he could tell a story like nobody's business. That's why I love the songs.
Yeah.
Because
the stories.
They told stories.
And you tell stories. You write stories, you collect stories. What do you think is the kernel of a good story?
Daddy always said, as long as there is that little, it's funny you said kernel of truth, it is a true story. Even if it starts out as a skeleton of two sentences, hang the meat on the skeleton any way you like. That kernel of truth, it is the gospel.
So there you go.
Yep.
When I say you collected songs, it wasn't even conscious of that. You had songs being sung to you that you were absorbing them, maybe stories as well. At what point did you think you would like to share them, you know, perform them
by
the way
force?
You do?
Because those, like, you know, everybody thinks about mountain women as being these little subdued, quiet, submissive creatures, and they were not. I mean, they would cuss a blue streak, and they would run their husbands off with shotguns, and that's why their husbands stayed in the barn a lot. You know, they'd go, I always would wonder, why are they down in the barn? Well, it was because they wouldn't let them in the house. Them big, strong mountain women. Well, we'd gone to a round robin, interestingly enough, here. And there was an empty chair, because I think Red Parham had died. And Granny looked at that chair. When I came in, though, she said, sit down. And I said, where? And she said, there. I said, I ain't sitting down there. And she said, don't you get smart with me. You sit down there. I sat down. When the time came, because they would start with the oldest person and go around the circle, and when it got to be my turn, I didn't say nothing. I just sat there. Because everybody in that circle is ancient. They's all over 30. And I just, you know, I was saying, what am I doing here with all these old people? And Granny said, you know, I had never thought about it before. That was a lie. Because she had. But she said, you look around at all these old gray heads, and you know that this thing ain't going to survive if we don't get these young'uns singing. I don't think I made it through a single verse that they didn't have to help me with. But I swear, Fiona, when I would hesitate, eight voices would say, she hopped up on her, and I'd pick the line up and go right on. And then the next verse, actually, I just chose that at random, but it was pretty fair miss. Said a pretty fair miss all in her garden. And a handsome young soldier come a-riding by, said, could I impose on a fair young maiden and ask her for my bride to be? said, handsome young soldier standing by the gateway, a man of honor you may be. How could you impose on a fair young maiden who never intends your bride to be?
So it was a gentle way of just trying to coax you to carry it on into the seventh generation,
right,
and beyond.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's funny how you realize life, it really is a circle. Because as the years went by, you know, one by one, they passed away. And where one time, you know, I was just the person that went and got the spit cup or carried the pocketbooks, or and then I was one of the singers that always got to sing last if there was time left over. And then I became one of six, and then one of five, and then one of three and two, and then me and Kaz were the last ones. And I'll never forget, at Mars Hill, me and Kaz were on stage, and he was singing Find Sally, and he sung the same verse twice. And he turned around and looked at me, and I saw this confusion. And so I said, okay. One night is, and he picked it right up and went.
And so, you were the...
Right. I got to hand it back to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I came off stage in Berea, and at that time I was, you know, popping little lines, and didn't even realize I was doing it, words, three or four words to Granny, three or four to Burr's Hill, because they'd get lost in a song. And so some young people met me and said, why don't, you know, you ought to ditch these old people and start, you know, because your voice is much stronger and they're, you know, they're old. And I said, you want your jaws boxed? Because I said, those people right there are the reason I am here. And had it not been for them, you know, I'd still be wandering around being dummies like you. because there is a certain time to tell the truth, and that was one of them. Because they gave me so much, and now as a grandmother myself, I realize how much they gave.
Now, Granny was worried that it was going to die out, and she looked around and saw the circle of gray hair.
And an empty chair.
Right. And you were in the empty chair. Now, a couple of questions. First of all, was her concern legitimate? Was it sort of dying out then? Were there fewer and fewer people picking it up? Was it beginning to fade at that time?
No. It was beginning to change. And what it was beginning to become was country and western. You know, there were people that were starting to make it, you know, play guitars with it, play banjos with it. And Granny said, they're going to make it into that darned old country western. And she said, it ain't supposed to be sung like that. It's supposed to be sung one voice telling a story. And she said, and you can't learn that from a book. You have to hear somebody do it. And even Cecil Sharp said, you know, there's no way that I can write down what these singers are doing. There's no way, because there's no musical notation that would explain it. And I know what he is talking about. It's all that weird phrasing and pausing. And why did Dillard say hits, you know, before ever? And then Granny doing that little whip at the end. But the next question was,
who's in the circle with you now?
Well, I'm forming a circle. I had one of the best, and I know everybody laughs because I say it every year. But this year we did things different. You know, we really did. Because I would sing the line, and they would sing it back. And we would do it over and over and over and over and over and over till they had the trills, they had the pauses, the stresses where they're not supposed to be. And so this was the first year I'd done that. So there's a bunch of people in that circle. In my family circle, I've got a cousin. They all want to be country and western singers. But except for my son, Andrew, who's here, and Ezra, my grandson, who he's really into Happy Birthday right now. But he can also sing just this little bitty part of Little Matthew Groves. And he is right dead on pitch, too. So that tells me that he's going to be a singer. And so I'm hunting, you know.
That's a song also from Across the Pond.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Would you give us a verse of that?
Oh, yeah. You want me to give you the one that caught Andrew's and Ezra's attention?
Yeah.
He took her by the lily white hand and led her across the hall. He pulled out his sword and he cut off her head and he kicked it against the wall, and he kicked it against the wall.
You mentioned Cecil Sharp in passing there, and he came over in the early 1900s. Many of the people from whom he collected were your relatives.
Yeah, when he came here, I'm related to, I think, 37 of the people he collected from.
Yeah. And he hit his richest seam in Madison County, didn't he?
Jane Gentry, Mary Sands. And actually, remember I was telling you about taking Granny in Brazil to see their great-great-aunt, Zephora Rice, sung for him in 1918 when she was 40. I interviewed her in 1970. There was a wonderful librarian at Mars Hill by the name of Bill Tideman, and he ordered 7 of those books and gave them to my family. And so they laid right under the Bible, because it was the book.
And it validated who they were, and it validated what they had passed down, and it was real. And
yep. Why, them songs is in the book.
Did they quibble with anything that was in the book and say you didn't get the right version, or you should
No,
have
they
the...
wondered why he didn't put this and or that in.
Now, when you talk about a lot of these characters, I am hearing people jumping out of the pages of your novel, My Old True Love, and the songs. How many songs are in that book?
You know, I don't know, but they kept... What would happen is I'd just be writing along, and all of a sudden, there'd be a song. And so I would write the whole song down, and then I'd be writing along, and then another song would fall out. And Jim, my husband, who was kind of my muse, you know, I would read to him, and he said, now don't get too attached to those songs being in there, Sheila, because some editor somewhere is going to cut them out. She couldn't, because she said they were so intertwined with what was being told in the story that they fit perfect, and to take them out would leave a hole.
Which is what life was like.
Exactly.
That's the purpose of the songs.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
They weren't grafted on something you did separately.
And they were not stage pieces. Mm-hmm. People just sung. Uh-huh. Period.
At the end of your book, too, one of your sons did a little bit of what we're doing now and did a little interview with you. Is Andrew?
Andrew asked a really interesting question. He said, did you feel like that it was you writing the story, or did you feel like that it was a story that was being written by somebody else through you? And there were times when I'd wake up at night and Artie's voice would be going just, you know, as fast in my head, and I would have to get up and she was talking faster than I could write. You know, so, and then when Mama said that she was not buried in Sodom, that she was buried over on Grapevine, which is right down the ridge from the house that I live in now. And Artie was the one that stepped out and told the story. So
it was such a strong voice right from the first line on the first page. I'm not going to give any more of it away, but I still can paraphrase that first paragraph because it grabbed me so much. And the turns of phrase and the way people speak. Do you feel that the accent, the dialect of the mountains is on the wane? Is it still strong?
Nah, none of my children even talk like I do. You know, they all try to talk like Peter Jennings did. And I always thought that was odd. He's Canadian, wasn't he, or something? But, you know, I can understand that because My mother practiced in front of a mirror down in Mobile, which is weird, because in Mobile, how could they make fun of anybody's accent? But Mama's accent, you know, being mountain, they made fun of her, and so she changed it. You couldn't tell what part of the world she come from. But as she got older, she said, you know, life is a funny journey. There I was, 24 years old, down there, standing in front of that mirror in Mobile, trying to lose my accent because they was making fun of me. And now they're paying you to go about and talk the same way. But I made a conscious decision to keep mine, yeah. Because you learn a way to talk that you think other people can understand you better. And then as you get older, and then big holes form up there in the gray matter, and things, you know, whole worlds drop through and disappear into the, and they never come back, you know, and so what you have to fall back on is what you had as a child. Mm-hmm. And my mama had the prettiest way of putting that. She said, well, it's because you stored those in the uncluttered mind of a child. Yeah. And so I think that's why we get our accent. Yours is getting stronger.
You think so?
From when I first met you. Yes, it is. Yeah. Of course, you're not gray or anything. I'm not implying that, Fiona. But yeah, I think as we get older, we return to that which is real.
Yeah.
And what was real for me was a bunch of wonderful, fabulously talented family members that took the time with a young'un that was her father's active child and sat me down and taught me a whole world of stuff, stories and songs, and gave me a view of the world that I would have never had otherwise.
What a pleasure it's been to get to sit and have this time with Sheila. She's given me a gift to take away. So yes. I want to thank Sheila very, very much for the time she's spent with us all this week. Sheila, we love you. Thank you very much.
Thanks to everyone at the Swan and Noah Gathering, especially Al Pettaway on sound, Julie Glaub, Mark Weems, Jim and Beth McGill, Doug and Darcy Orr, and Margaret Kennedy. More details on Sheila K. Adams' music is in our playlist. Check our website for that. And if you missed something here on the radio and want to listen again, it's all online at thistleradio.com. Over Home is Sheila K. Adams' song, celebrating her Appalachian homeland and heritage of ballads brought by her ancestors to the United States in the 1700s in Sheila K.'s hands, now seven generations strong and counting.
This place my ancestors chose so very long ago to settle down and live and love and die in. It was surely to them the most lovely in all the world. It must have promised peace to them again. And someday I'll come home forever, if it's only to rest upon some hillside. And a love for this land will ever burn in me. With my dying breath, I'll sing this song for thee. Well, my home here is a refuge for the heart inside of me. The people are all my people, so strong and full of love. This land of mountains reaching for the skies so silently has taught the true meaning of being free. And someday I'll come home forever, if it's only to rest upon some hillside. And a love for this land will ever burn in me. With my dying breath, I'll sing this song for thee.
The Thistle and Shamrock is a service mark of Fiona Ritchie and is made possible in part by the Compass Records Group. Compass Records, Green Linnet and Mulligan Records, dedicated to the support of Celtic music, past, present and future. www.compassrecordsgroup.com